Access number 30,009, Mr. Fred Brett, Real 4. Now, what uniform, what, you know, special uniform, if any, did you have?
They sold out. They brought this new uniform out, and it's like golfers wear today, the fin jackets which keep the winds out, and we had a parka, and that had sheepskin lining in it. We had pants with long johns with a flap in the back to go to the toilet, string vests, woolly hats, a metal mesh to put in your boots, and I thought that was very good to keep your feet warm, and like a gauze you used to have in your boots. Yeah.
And did this keep the worst of it out, or?
Well, yes, because we used to have foot inspection every so often, and I don't think many in the battalion had frostbite in their feet or anything at the finish. No, it was quite good.
And what about the latrines? Tell us about them.
The funny thing about the latrines, one of my mates who belongs to the British Legion, whereas he's just died a couple of weeks ago, that he said to me about 3 months ago, he said, "Do you know I can't remember how we went to the toilet out there?" So I said, "What?" I said, "You must come home with a big tummy then." So I said, "We used to dig a hole and put a little bit of canvas round it, and that was all." Well, he said, "I can't remember that." And one of the boys showed him a picture of it. That's all we used to do. And used to move it quite often because they didn't dig too deep.
So what about the food? What food did you get in the line?
We had American C-7s. And
now, what were they like?
I think they was absolutely great. They was 3 main tins for breakfast, dinner and tea. They had ones with biscuits in. They had a lovely chocolate in them. Oh, I thought they was great, because when I first got there, I thought they'd never keep me going, but they did. And you had 20 cigarettes in there.
What would the meals be like in them? I mean, because were they...
Oh, it was really good stuff.
Some people have said they were to a different taste. Or
I think 90% had noodles in. I'm damn sure nearly everything had noodles in. You had chickens and noodles. You had all sorts of things that had noodles in, and I thought that was good. I got no complaint with them. I don't think anybody had, really. No, the C7s, that was good. With the 20 cigarettes in as well, that's what a lot of people like.
Did you start smoking then?
I only started to smoke when the cold was in, and people kept lighting a cigarette and holding their hands around it and warming their hands, and I thought, that's a good idea. So that's how I started. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bothered.
Did you take to it easily? Because you were a bit late for starting for those
days. We used to have 190 cigarettes given to us a week, and they still wasn't enough. We should have to buy them when the nappy come up behind the lines.
And how many were you smoking a day by then, Rob?
I suppose we smoked, must have been about 300 a week. Must have been. I think most people did. They really got through them who smoked.
But it kept you warm. Did it help your nerves at all? We'll talk about
that. Not really. I mean, I liked the ones when we first got there. I mean, I used to throw mine away to start with to people. But some of them said, "Oh no, we're keeping them, taking them home." Until they'd been there a little while, and then they realised how many cigarettes they could have to take home that they decided to give them away. Silly parishes.
Any other rations you got? Did you get a rum ration?
No, but we had a cook come up once a week, Higgins, and cook us a fresh meal. And when we was on 327, that he'd come up, and I just thought, because he got a little marquee at the back, and he's gone back to Echelon or B Echelon where he goes, that I would decide to have a look in this marquee, see what's going. So I walked down to this marquee, because you always got your weapon with you, and there's a goat there. So I ignored him and went back up into the hole and messed about for a little while, and I said, "I'm going to go back down." I went back down there, and there's this goat standing there again. And I got back, and I got almost to my dugout. Come on over. In his dugout. Come on, quick, get your weapon. Come on. And I don't know who else it was with us. Come on. We go down the hill, and there's this gook, I tweaked, he's standing there with a weapon. Now, no gooks allowed weapons. He was a prisoner, he's give himself up. He's in our lines and give himself up. So I took the weapon away from him, and I took him up to headquarters, and he was interrogated up there. So I could honestly say,
Korean.
Yeah, I was the first one to catch a prisoner. I can honestly say that, because he'd come in our lines and standing there. Yeah. Yeah, I never did find out what was in that marquee.
Now, what were your sort of daily duties? You'd wake up in the morning.
We'd done a lot of wiring, hell of a lot of wiring.
Tell me about that. How do you go about it? It's Dennett wire, isn't it?
Yeah, we used.
Explain what it is.
Well, you drove the pickets in and the iron pickets.
Now, did you knock them in or did you
screw
them in?
Yeah, we had sledgehammers to knock them in. And you bane it to tighten the wire up as you threaded it round everything. And we'd done quite a bit of that. And in the mornings, though, in the winter when it was really cold, to go and get a 5-gallon drum of water down the hill, it took three of you. It was always three of you. You all had your weapons. One carried the jerry can, one carried the picket, and one carried the sledgehammer. And you would go down, and you use the sledgehammer to break the ice. You'd fill the jerry can. You'd stick the picket through the handle, so two of you can carry it back up. And the other one carried the sledgehammer up. And you used to do that regular, to get water, wash and shave in the mornings. Yeah.
We were expected to stay washed and shaved, every
day. Yes. Yeah. Expected to be washed and shaved. Yeah.
Was there enough water for that?
Well, when you went down and got it. And then later on we had a shower, I'd never forget that. They built a shower and they took us out the line to go back to have the shower. And the cook's ladle, three of them to have a shower. You tipped the one, that got you wet. And you use your soap and that, and then they use these other two ladles to wash you off. Three ladles. I think we only done that twice at these showers. Yeah.
So how would the day start? You'd get, what would you do during a typical day?
Well, you would stand to, test your weapons.
Now, hang on. Stand to. What does stand to mean? Just explain it for me.
Well, we stand there and you look to see the position, see if anything's altered, I suppose this is the idea of it, and test our weapons.
So you do it first thing at dawn?
Yeah, and in the winter that most of the guns used to freeze, and my Bren never froze. And they asked me why, and I didn't like to tell them. So I thought, here we go again, I was getting in another row. Then I'd been promoted to corporal then. That I'd taken the spring out the grenade and put it in the Bren to give it a bit more boost. And it used to fire in the mornings.
But it was worth checking them if it was that cold.
Yeah, oh yeah, yes it was. Yeah.
Anything else you'd do at stand to? Would you look over the top or...
Oh, yeah, you stood there, yeah, because it was only more or less that high, so you see all the way over. Yeah, you see all the way over. And that is when they give me the American carbine. And that was the infrared. That was when we was in Korea, that they gave me the infrared, and I had like a 12-volt battery.
Was that early on or later on?
That was a bit later on.
We'll come back to that then, I think, probably. You'd have stand two. What would happen after stand two then?
Well,
how would you organise a sentry? Would there be a sentry on duty all the time?
Oh yes, you was. Oh yes, sometimes you was four on and four off. But you never hardly done two on and two off. But you nearly always done four on and four off.
And what do the sentries do?
Well, just stand there, and keep eye that everything is all clear in front of you. You got them all on different positions, you know. Every company's got them, and right in the forward positions. And
could they stay awake?
Oh, yes, they had to. Oh, Christ, yeah. Yeah.
I know they had to, but did they?
Oh, yeah. I think they did, because God really wake the next lot up. I'll tell you that later. When we didn't. Yeah, that...
So the central, you'd said that, and as corporal, or lance corporal, would you...
Corporal I was made then. I was made corporal, yeah.
When were you made corporal then?
Oh, not long after I was... got back with it, I was made lance corporal, and more or less made corporal.
Very quickly.
And
would you... was it your job to check the sentries?
Well, yes, corporals and sergeants and that. Yeah, we'd check every so often. Like, you know, if you were on guard that night, you'd go and check. It's your turn to check, you would. But you didn't bother a lot, really, being honest. You knew the blokes. It's your life at stake, so you didn't have to really check.
What would you do during the day, then?
As I said, after stand two, you'd fairly have breakfast. Always make sure your weapon's clean. Always do that sit about.
How would you clean? I mean, was it difficult cleaning your weapons in the trenches?
No, not really.
How did you do it? Do you oil them or what?
Yeah, we had oil and everything, you know, just clean them the same as what you see in barracks. Just clean them up, make sure they were spotless.
And that every day?
More or less, yeah. And you would do wiring, you know, they'd get you out on doing wiring. And
couldn't you be picked up by snipers? Or were they too far apart?
I think we're a bit too far apart for snipers.
Were snipers
on,
a risk at all, Korean or Chinese?
I think snipers was a bit, yes, when you was out sometimes at night, they would be about. You know, they would
not
be
when
about.
They couldn't reach
no, not
line.
Really, no, no. The artillery could, though.
Was it artillery fire?
At times it was, yeah. I mean, they would let you know, they was about, they'd fire the artillery at you, or mortars.
What was it like when it was being under shell fire?
Shell fire is not as bad as mortar. I think mortar's worse.
Why?
You don't hear nothing. You don't hear nothing at all. And that shell fire is when Keith Nuttall, he got the mentioned in dispatches. I mean, he was so cool on that radio. I mean, I wasn't down there with him. I went out to get him out, but. He was so cool, they'll all tell you that when the officer and one of my mates.
That's
said,
on this patrol, isn't
yeah.
It? When they came back after.
Yeah.
That's after you've been down the Tammany Trail and then back up to Koeng Sang.
Yeah.
So we'll come to that. Now, what about your nerve? Did you ever get nervous about it, or were you nervous in action?
Yes, everyone did. Everyone. All the non religious ones you could hear mumbling and praying when it got nearer to the time. I think everyone prayed. I don't care who they was. I think they always had a little prayer, any of them. Yeah. I think everyone had a... Nobody could really say they wasn't frightened, I don't think. Because war wasn't quite what you expected it.
How bad was it?
Oh, I don't think it was bad. It was just thinking to yourself, oh, well, I hope I get out of this all right. I want to go home. That was the main thing.
What about the officers? You'd be starting to see them more in the trenches, I presume.
They used to come round and sit down with you. And I mean, we never wore a hat badge. We never wore a rank. So, you know, you just called them by their Christian name or same as they called you at times. And that was it. You know, you just all sat around together and chat.
That's much more informal then.
Yeah. Because you mustn't call them sir. Obvious reasons.
Well,
because if you got captured or anything like that, you'd still be calling them sir, and they would know who's an officer then, wouldn't they? You know, that who'd interrogate more. So we never called them sir or sergeant, or very rare.
And any officers spring out as good officers?
Major Holden, he was very good.
I don't know why he
used to talk to us and he was an older man, and he used to explain things to us, and he broke his leg, and he had to go back to North, and we missed him, because the next major, I was trying to think who he was, took over, was nowhere near as good. I think Major Holden had been in the Second World War, and he'd been there, so, you know, he knew how to talk to people, and that, like, you know, if somebody got a little bit nervous, he could talk to them, and that, like...
Any other characters from the unit you remember?
Oh, Nobby support? Singleton.
Nobby Singleton, who is he?
Oh, he was a proper Londoner. It was just a character and a half, he was.
Sergeant or?
No, just a private. He finished up a private. He started as one and finished as one. But,
and why did it stick out in your mind to it?
It's one person, I mean, I think to tell tales, the correct tales, is one of the people you should really see. Like when he went to, he'll tell you the tale, he gets all the girls laughing now, but when he went on Incheon to his leave, went to Incheon, that the seeing the ladies of the night, and he said, and this one here, he said, I kissed her, and he said, her face was so white, I thought I got her up the wrong way. And you want to hear the tales he can tell you. And then it was going across there, and somebody said, it's cheaper, take a blanket. So he ran all the way back and charged across there with a blanket. So on his 65th birthday, quite a few of us, you know, gave him, I took him a present over, and we wrapped up a blanket for him and put some Smarties in the present for him, the blue ones, the starch tablets. And his children, grandchildren, kept asking him what it was for. He said, when I do a revisit to Korea.
Why did he stand out so much? Was he just a funny man?
He was, yeah. And he was a brilliant footballer. Yeah. Yeah, him and Brooksy was together because they was in a different platoon than me when we was out there, like, you know, same company but different platoon. And them two was always together. And they were both pretty good footballers, like, you know. Oh, yeah.
Any other big characters?
Well, when we went out, that we had to do a certain time to go out there. We had a certain length of time. And it seems like that some of them hadn't quite got enough. Could you sign on for another 6 months? And they did. And there was the Cullen twins, I can remember them. And they got out, when they got out there, and been out there a couple of months or something, they found out they hadn't signed the right papers. And they tried to get them to sign. And none of them in the battalion, what had done it, would sign. They all come home.
Now, what about Bert Fitt, Company B, Company 7 Major? Bert Fitt.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Winky.
Yeah, Winky, yeah, Winky.
Do you remember him?
Yeah, but Bell was ours, Ding Dong. Ding
oh,
Dong Bell.
Him, yeah.
Yeah, Ding Dong Bell.
Company Sergeant Major.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
What was he like?
He was all right. He was always a laugh. Yeah, he always had a laugh with us, you know. But never see too much of him, really. Come round and have a chat with you, you know. But I think he had other things to do, I think, you know, the Sergeant Major. Just keep an eye on everything. Yeah.
So were you aware of Fitt? Because he was quite well known in the
region. Oh, yeah. He was a, what we call a bastard, wasn't he? Nobody really liked him. He, from when you're in barracks, and he pulls everything up, you know, for the least little thing, you know, where a lot of them would tell you off and let it go. He wouldn't, he'd have you on orders. First chance, he'd have you on orders, and nobody really liked him. It was the same as me. I was with Corporal Fairbrass, and he came from Ware, and everybody hated him. He was a regular.
So he was the chap you were sharing the room with?
Yep. One night.
Tell me about Fairbrass then.
Well, one night, we're on guard together, on stand two, up the front there. And I said, oh, look, D Company coming back early. A chinks. I said, it's D Company. Look, they've got round the bottom of that mountain, the bottom of us, and you can see them lighting their cigarettes in their hands. So, the chinks, I'm ordering you to open fire on them. I said, I'm not doing that. He said, I outrank you, which they did, because he's a regular. And he said, I'm ordering you, I'll have you court-martialed. So, straight away, I put a round of bullets above their heads. They shouted, D Company, and I said, well, get up that hill and don't stop. And off they went. And the person what took him out, he got chucked out the forces, and he had a big Britannia tattooed on his chest. And I thought, well, that's handy, isn't it? And one of them was my mate Ken Pateman, who's just died. he said to me, I'm glad you could aim straight, because I was one of them on that patrol. I put the bullets above. Yeah. Everyone hated Fairbrass until last...
How did you get on with him? Not well, understand
it. No, but I could look after myself.
Did you mind sharing a bunker?
Well, I didn't like the idea, but I had to, really. Nobody else was good with him. And last Friday, I found out that he died about 2 years after he came out. It was only last Friday I found out. After two years he came out, he died of a massive heart attack.
Do you know his first name?
No. That's being honest. And I've got to ring up Keith and all of them, because they all said to me what happened to him, he come from where. And I've got to notify him, because I only found out Friday.
Now, any other characters?
Oh, yeah. Stolly. He died. Called Stolly. Yeah.
What was he like?
He came from Suffolk. And we've met him once or twice. He's died now when we come out. And he could really sing and whistle. And his favourite song, If I Was a Blackbird, I'd Whistle and Sing. And he could really whistle. And when he was having a drink with the boys, what was going to go home, he'd always get up and give you a song and that, and he was very good. Very good he was. Stolly. And he had a Suffolk accent as well.
Now, so what else would you do? We'll get back into what you do in the day. So you sort of, you're about to do a bit of wiring.
Yeah, and then you would sort out patrols. And then you would...
For the evening?
Yeah, and then you would...
Anything else in the day?
No, not really in the afternoon. If you ain't got nothing to do, you just sit about, sort of thing, like, you know, and wait till the evening comes, because you've got to go out, like, you know, and you try to get a bit of sleep. If you've been out, you have a sleep, and if you're going out, you have a sleep.
And how would you prepare for a patrol?
Now, there's Smith from Hartford. I'm trying to think of his name. That going out on patrol. And I said, you coming tonight? And he said, yes. And we had a young boy come up to make the battalion up that morning. And he was put into Smith's dugout. And young Smudger give his Bren the final clean. And he must have hit the safety catch. And the bullet shot out and that. Went in this poor young boy's, only been up there half a day, and it went into his forehead, it came out the side of his jaw, and it went into his shoulder, and come out the side, down the, killed instantly, and Smudger got 18 months for that, and we all protested. And I think they knocked it down to 9 months, because they never see Smudge anymore. Oh, I've seen him since he lives at Hartford. And he won't join the comrades or anything like that. Nothing, he won't have nothing to do with them after that. It was a pure accident. But that is life, isn't it?
Now, so how would you prepare? If you knew you were going out for a patrol, this in the early time when you were coming saying it, how would you prepare?
Me? I used to think I was Mighty Joe. I used to carry 6 phosphorus grenades, 6 ordinary grenades, 4 pouches with 3 Bren gun, all fully loaded, a mag on the Bren, 2 bandoliers round my neck, and I could carry them on fighting patrol all night long. I ran out of ammunition once, and I said I'd never do that again.
What other preparations would you make? How would you pick who was going on patrol? How many would there be?
Well, so you pick between you and the officer, like, you know, say, who hasn't been out lately, and...
So which officer would it be with you, normally?
Your platoon officer.
Who was that?
Henderson was mine.
What was he like?
All right. Very nice. Yeah.
So who would go? How many men?
Well, it all depends what it was. If it was fighting patrol, listening patrol, or what. I mean, a fighting patrol, I suppose, was about 16. A listening patrol would be 3 to 5, something like that.
And were it volunteers, or were they just you and you?
Yeah, that's it. You, well, you'd say to them, do you want to come? Or, like, you know, if you knew them, you know, they've got one to do, things like that. And one he always on, that they used to get on to me because there was a chink been buried and his skull cap was showing at the ground because they bury him sitting up because the ground is too hard. And I always just tap him on the head and say, good night, I'll see you in the morning. And tap him back on the head, they didn't think that was right. That was me.
So, any other, what about briefing or O group or anything like that?
That came easy. We'd just say what we was going to do, listening patrol, fighting patrol, or roughly where we were going, and that was it. That's all you needed to know. And
so
off you went.
Minimal.
Yeah, it was. Didn't. Yeah.
Tell me what a listening patrol was then.
Well, we got to a certain point and you lay down and listen to see if you can hear the enemy or anything like that. But a lot of the time you could smell where they'd been, where they chewed beetle nut and that. You could smell garlic and beetle nut rather than see them.
So you just lie out there?
Yeah.
You move or just...
No, you just lay there.
And this is when you freeze to the
ground? You get your six plates when you're laying there. Yeah. Yeah, you get froze to the ground.
And there'd not be so many of you on there?
No,
did
not
you ever
see
anything happen on a listening patrol?
Sometimes you would see a patrol go by, you know. And why have a go at me without having a go at you sort of thing? That's what you'd say to yourself. You just report it, you see a patrol. Oh, yeah.
And what about the fighting patrols? What would they be doing?
Oh, you're going out looking for them. If you see anything or anything, and you would have a go. But, you know, that...
So how many would be on that?
About 16 at times. About 16 of you. Yeah.
Yeah. There'd be an officer, sergeant, NCO.
Officer and an NCO and the men. Yeah.
So what time would you go out from the lines?
Well, as soon as it started getting dusk. You know, about... I suppose some nights it was early in the winter and later in the summer. You know, depending on the weather and everything. Yeah.
And what formation would you take up?
Nearly always in single file. Yeah.
Where would the officer be?
Well, sometimes he was up the front, sometimes you're back. And I can remember one night we went out and I said to Omar, that was a deep paddy field we went through. It went through a paddy field. I said, my boots full of bloody water. Because we got fired upon and we was retreating. And when I looked, I'd got a flesh wound. My boot was full of blood, wasn't it?
So you hadn't felt it?
No. I've got a lovely mark across there. Just a flesh wound.
So not serious enough to...
No.
Did you get any attention at all?
Oh, when I got back, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't nothing to worry about, as I said. Yeah, I just patched it up. I mean, but because it just skimmed, and well, it's like being at work, isn't it? A little cut can bleed more than a big one.